headlines, Russia ups the ante in the war on sanctions, with the West imposing retaliatory bans on nearly 400 members of the U.S. House of Representatives. The U.S. approves an additional $800 million military aid package for Ukraine, including helicopters and armored personnel carriers, as well as weapons and ammunition. Iran's deputy ambassador to the United Nations says occupation, terrorism, and foreign invasion are the main threats to security of women and girls in the West Asia region. Hello and welcome from our headquarters in Tehran. Thank you for joining us. My name is Gisumi Shahmadi, and these are top stories this hour. As the conflict in Ukraine enters its 50th day, the war theater is shifting mainly to the east and the south of the country. Here's the latest developments. Ukrainian forces claim that they have damaged a Russian warship in the Black Sea with missile strikes. Ukrainian officials said that a flagship of the Russian Black Sea Fleet carrying more than 500 crew members has been targeted. Russia has confirmed that its missile cruise ship has been seriously damaged in a blast. Moscow says that the ship's crew has been evacuated and the cause of the fire that caused the explosion is under investigation. The Russian Defense Ministry confirmed that its troops have now full control of the port in the besieged city of Mariupol. Moscow has also threatened to strike Ukraine's command centers in the capital, Kiev, if its attacks on Russia continues. Moscow has accused Kiev forces of attacking a territory in southern Russia. Commenting on the situation on the ground, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres said a humanitarian ceasefire in Ukraine, quote, does not seem possible. Meanwhile, Russia ups the ante in the war of sanctions, with the West imposing retaliatory bans on nearly 400 members of the U.S. House of Representatives. Russia's foreign ministry says the sanctions against U.S. lawmakers include a ban on entry into Russia. The ministry says more sanctions will follow in retaliation for Washington's punitive measures over the Ukraine war. Russia also introduced sanctions against nearly 90 Canadian senators. Moscow says more bans will follow due to Ottawa's, quote, short-sighted policies. New measures come in response to sanctions imposed by the U.S. and Canada on members of the Russian State Duma, the lower house of parliament. The West has slapped many rounds of sanctions on Moscow, including the exclusion of several banks from the SWIFT payment system. Western countries have also expelled dozens of Russian diplomats on alleged spying charges. And the United States has approved an additional $800 million package of military assistance to Ukraine amid the ongoing war. The U.S. President Joe Biden made the announcement following a phone call with his Ukrainian counterpart, Volodymyr Zelensky. The new package includes heavier military equipment such as helicopters, armored personnel carriers, and weapons. The latest package brings Washington's total military assistance to Kiev to over $2.5 billion. The package was approved by a mechanism that allows the president to transfer articles and services from U.S. stocks without congressional approval in response to an emergency. This is while Russia has warned NATO against providing military assistance to Ukraine. Moscow says it considers vehicles carrying weapons to Ukraine legitimate military targets. And Iran's foreign minister says the Islamic Republic opposes the war in Ukraine and supports a political solution based on diplomatic dialogue to the ongoing conflict. Hossein Amir Abdullahian made the remarks in a phone call with his Ukrainian counterpart Dmytro Kubela. He said Tehran hopes negotiations between Moscow and Kiev would lead to stability and peace in Ukraine. The Iranian minister called on Ukraine to provide full protection for Iran's diplomatic missions and its embassy in Kiev. Amir Abdullahian also said Iran is ready to send a medical team to Ukraine. Kuleba also, for his part, thanked Iran's stance against the war, saying that Kiev seeks an end to the war and the conflict in the country. Also, Iran's deputy ambassador to the United Nations says occupation, terrorism, and foreign invasion are the main threats to security of women in the West Asia region. Zahra Ershadi mentioned the current situation of Palestinian women and girls as a clear example of this issue. Ershadi noted that sexual violence against women is a crime often used as a war tactic and by terrorist groups. Iran's deputy UN envoy said, "Putting an end to all forms of armed conflict is the best way to prevent such violent crimes." She made the remarks while addressing a UN Security Council meeting on women, peace, and security. The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution says Saudi Arabia does not have a chance of winning its war on Yemen, urging the kingdom to stop its aggression there. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei said, "With the efforts of the Yemeni people and the courage of their leaders, a Saudi victory is impossible." He called on Saudi officials to find a way out of this war. Iran's leader expressed support for negotiations and a lasting ceasefire in Yemen and praised the patience of people of that country. Yemen has been devastated by a war waged by Saudi Arabia and some of its Arab allies in March 2015. According to the UN, more than 300,000 Yemenis have been killed through direct or indirect causes such as hunger. We reached out to political commentator Mohsen Saleh to get his thoughts on the Saudi aggression against Yemen. He says Riyadh needs to urgently look for ways to have a peaceful coexistence with its neighbor.
The Saudis, they committed crimes. They paid a lot of money in order to let the Yemenis bow for them, which is, I think, they failed. They failed drastically. They damn failed. And now the Saudis, they have one choice only. They don't have another choice. Yesterday or 1 week ago, they have appointed some of the people of the Yemenis and brought them to Riyadh in order to find a solution. And they send them a message to the Ansarullah to come and join. They can't join Riyadh. Riyadh, you are one of the parties who aggressed, who killed the Yemenis. You have to go to another place and say, well, we have failed, and we come to terms in order to find an understanding with the Yemenis and live a peaceful life neighbor to neighbor. That's the natural thing. And I guess the Saudis now, they have to receive the consequences of their aggression against the Yemenis. And I guess it's not going to be easy. It will really make the Saudis that regret their aggression against Yemen.
Afghan people have held a rally in front of Iran's embassy in Kabul to show solidarity with neighboring Iran amid an ongoing conspiracy targeting friendship between the two nations.
Iran and Afghanistan are brothers. We remain united. No to conspiracy against two neighbors. Afghans here chant as they're rallying to show solidarity with Iran.
We have gathered here on behalf of the Afghan nation to voice solidarity and unity with the great people of Iran. We are demonstrating the truth today, which is brotherhood and neighborhood between the two Islamic nations. We also urge the officials of two countries not to let anyone take advantage of recent developments.
I had been a refugee in Iran and got an education there. Then I returned to Afghanistan to serve my people. Iran's hosting of refugees was generous. I demand Iran continue their assistance to our poor nation. Afghans always needed Iran, and so do today.
Attendees also stressed the need for people's awakening at the time of enemies' scheme. They say fake media and enemies' propaganda must not mislead public opinion.
Iran and Afghanistan have been united nations, but today the enemies of the two nations try to sow discords by spreading lies. Afghans have gathered here to thwart Western schemes and say no to U.S. conspiracies.
We have come here to help foil the enemy's plots. Foreigners and Takfiri groups must know that they cannot sow sedition between Islamic countries. I hope the two nations understand each other's benevolent will and stand by each other's side.
The rally comes 2 days after a number of people who are described in media reports as extremist elements attacked the Iranian diplomatic mission in Afghanistan. Afghans here said they don't let enemies plus harm their friendship with the Iranian people. They praise Iran for years of close cooperation with Afghanistan. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
Israeli soldiers have shot dead 2 more Palestinians in the West Bank, bringing to 8 the number of Palestinians killed across the occupied territory since the weekend. The Palestinian Health Ministry said 16-year-old Gusay Hamara was shot multiple times when regime forces raided Husan village west of the city of Bethlehem. Israeli forces prevented emergency medical services from reaching the wounded Palestinian teenager, letting him to bleed to death. The regime troops have also refused to hand over the Palestinian teen's body to his family. Angry Palestinians later clashed with Israeli forces near Bethlehem. The ministry says a 20-year-old Palestinian youth identified as Omar Alyan was also shot dead in the village of Silwad, where at least 6 other Palestinians were injured. Israeli forces also arrested 14 Palestinians in various parts of the West Bank following the latest raids. Palestinian factions in the Gaza Strip said they are prepared to defend Al-Quds and the Al-Aqsa Mosque. Italy's economy, already attested by 2 years of anti-pandemic measures, is further suffering from sanctions imposed on Moscow by the members of the European Union. Following the war in Ukraine, inflation in Italy continues to grow as authorities fear serious repercussions on the country's society. Max Civilli reports from Rome.
1.5 months into the Ukraine war, and the effects of the conflict are starting to bite hard into Italy's economy. 2 years of anti-COVID measures and a series of sanctions adopted against Russia, the largest and most severe restrictive penalties ever adopted by the European Union, have piled pressure on Italy, which is among the countries relying the most on raw materials from Moscow. Russia's natural gas accounts for about 40% of Italy's total gas supply. Due to soaring energy prices, Italy's inflation surged to 7% in March, the highest rate ever recorded in 3 decades.
L'inflazione è preoccupante.
The current inflation rate in Italy is worrying, as it can seriously affect families. At this stage, it's impossible to make any prediction. However, if things remain this way, the country may well slip into recession in the coming future. It's the globalization itself that has been greatly put to the test by the 2008 financial crisis, the pandemic, and now the Ukraine war.
The Bank of Italy has recently warned that the country's annual inflation rate would rise to over 8% this year if the Mario Draghi government opts to enact a complete halt in gas supplies to Italy from Russia. Meanwhile, Rome has slashed its growth estimate for this year, forecasting the country's gross domestic product to grow by 3.1%, down from a 4.7% projection made last September. During a ceremony for the 170th anniversary of the state police force, the Italian Interior Minister Luciana Lamorgese warned that the nefarious effects of the war in Ukraine risk creating major social problems in Italy. Problems, the minister noted, that must be urgently addressed.
The situation of uncertainty on the economic and social front that the war opened, in part due to the effect on the energy market and the supply of raw materials, could have a major impact on industrial production, economic growth, employment levels, and therefore on the country's social moorings.
Thousands of small and medium firms have already been forced to shut down or reduce their activities across the country. Max Civilli, Rome.
Moving on, New York Police Department says that the suspect in the Brooklyn subway shooting on Tuesday has been arrested. The African-American suspect, identified as 62-year-old Frank James, was arrested after a day-long manhunt. He is now facing federal charges of terrorist attack. On Tuesday, the gunman put a gas mask on and detonated 2 smoke bombs in the 636 subway station in Brooklyn, before firing 33 shots into the crowd. 10 people were wounded, but none sustained life-threatening injuries. The suspect is said to have posted videos of himself ranting against racism in the U.S. and calling for violence on his YouTube channel. Now, for many people in Syria, the holy month of Ramadan marks a difficult time of the year as they are suffering from poverty and a food shortage. As our correspondent Muhammad Ali reports, many Syrians are struggling this year to put food on the table.
It's Ramadan, the holy month in which people fast from dawn to dusk. Syrian markets and souks are widely popular here in Damascus, like Bzouriyeh and Hamidiyeh, especially at this time of the year. Thousands of people shop for their daily basic needs despite the deteriorating economic situation and high prices due to war and unjust economic sanctions.
It's a war that always affects the state's economic capabilities and production. It led to a drop in the local currency and thus the high prices as well as economic sanctions that deprived us from many commodities.
NGOs in Syria work to support the society. Saad is one of them, and they have been cooking every year during Ramadan to provide breakfast to people in need. Thousands of meals are prepared by volunteers on a daily basis to be distributed in various cities. Terry, an Italian tourist, was passing by Saad's kitchen in Old Damascus and decided to volunteer and give them a hand.
I wanted to visit Syria for a long time, especially Damascus, the old city. Look. Watching the architecture, visiting the mosque. In London, I work as a food security consultant. So we study a lot how important it is for people to have it, to have access to food security and stuff.
For the 10th year here near the Umayyad Mosque, we are providing breakfast meals for needy people. We were afraid this year we would not get enough donations due to the economic crisis, but Syrians are still supporting each other. We have four kitchens. Over 10,000 meals are made every day.
After sunset, Damascene nights are unique. Shows and performances are organized, representing the country's culture and signaling Syrians' determination to restore normal life. In Ramadan, people rush to do good. Syrians in this month help each other overcome the repercussions of war by helping the needy and working together to rebuild their country and its economy towards a safe and prosperous Syria. Muhammad Ali, Damascus.
And that brings us to the end of this edition of World News. Stay tuned.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
Ramadan, the month of opportunities. In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. Salam and welcome to the program. We often forget God's blessings since we are plunged in them. Health is one of these blessings. We appreciate it only when we are sick. The blessed month of Ramadan is a great blessing. We should not be indifferent toward this great month. This month has an appearance and an inward. The appearance and outward of Ramadan is like other months. It has 29 or 30 days in which the sun rises and sets. But the inward of Ramadan is quite different. It is a year by itself, as the annual fates of human beings are determined in it. Ramadan is the month which God has chosen for revelation of the Quran. We have heard many times that Ramadan is the month of self-building and the month of cleansing the heart from the pollution of sins. But how can this materialize? Cleansing of the self and expurgation of the heart from sins is not that easy. However, there is a mystery in Ramadan which helps us reach this great goal. That mystery is the choosing of Ramadan for sending down the Quran. When God speaks of purifying the heart and self, He links it with revelation of the Quran and acquisition of knowledge. In Ayahs 129 and 151 of Surah Baqarah, Ayah 164 of Surah Al-Imran, and the second Ayah of Surah Jum'ah, we read that Allah has raised up the prophets to recite His signs to people, teach them the book and wisdom, and purify them. Thus, there is a close relation between sending down the Quran, reciting it, learning its wisdom on the one hand, and purification of the self on the other. Ramadan has been called the spring of the Quran, and the faithful try to recite part of it every day in this month. This recitation and contemplation of the ayahs of the Quran surely helps us gain purification of the self and cleansing of the heart from sins. In Ayah 9 of Surah Shams and Ayah 14 of Surah Al-A'la, God says that, "Surely felicitous is he who purifies himself." But we should not forget that whatever we gain is God's favor. Ayah 21 of Surah reads, "Were it not for Allah's grace and His mercy upon you, not one of you would ever be pure. But Allah purifies whomever He wishes, and Allah is all-hearing, all-knowing." Now, dear listeners, let us touch upon the issue of niyat, or intention, in fasting. Fasting, like all other worships, must be done with intention. It means the individual should abstain from eating, drinking, and certain other actions only for God's sake. It is enough to decide for fasting, and there is no need to utter it verbally. One can repeat the intention in his heart for each day of Ramadan, but he can also do it for the entire month on the first night. Intention in fasting is so important that if a person intentionally does not have intention before the azan or call for Fajr dawn prayer, he has nullified that day's fasting. Yet, he should not break his fasting till the call for dusk prayer. Moreover, he should compensate that day's fasting after Ramadan. One day a man came to Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, and asked him, "O God's messenger, is God near to us and can I speak in low voice with him? Or is he far and I should call him loudly?" Before the Prophet could answer him, an ayah was revealed to his heart. It was Ayah 186 of Surah Baqarah, where Allah says, "And when my servants ask you about me, tell them that I am indeed nearmost. I answer the supplicant's call when he calls me. So let them respond me and let them have faith in me so that they may fare rightly." Studying the practice of the Prophet and his infallible successors reveals the greatness of Ramadan. Upon seeing the crescent of Ramadan, the Prophet would stand toward the Qibla and ask God for security and health in this blessed month and would appeal God to assist him in prayer, fasting, and recitation of the Quran. The Prophet used to prepare food for the fasting people. He also used to help the needy more than before. He would recommend the faithful to recite Quran more than ever. He would put aside his bed in the third part of Ramadan to spend more time in worship. Once Imam Ali, peace upon him, asked the Prophet about the best deed in Ramadan, to which the Prophet answered that refraining from sins is the best deed in Ramadan. Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, told his close companion Abu Zar, "O Abu Zar, Allah has endeared prayer to me as he has endeared food for a hungry man and water for a thirsty man. A hungry man will be full when he eats, and a thirsty man will be satisfied when he drinks water. But I do not become satisfied with prayer." God says in Ayah 21 of Surah Ahzab, "Certainly there is a good exemplar for you in the Apostle of Allah." Sure, if we want to grow spiritually to be good servants of God, we have to follow the role model of the Prophet and his infallible successors.
Food for thought.
Salam, and let us listen to a famous statement from Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, regarding his loyal wife, the mother of all true believers, Hazrat Khadija, peace upon her. Khadija outclassed all other ladies in the world in her belief in God and in the Messenger of God.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z. An introduction to Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, the holy month of Quran and Du'as.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Most Beneficent, the Most Merciful. Dear brothers and sisters, Assalamu alaikum. Peace and blessings of Allah be upon you all. This is A to Z, coming to you from IRIB English Radio, and I'm your host, Ali. The month of Ramadan is also the month of Quran and prayers, du'as. Almighty Allah says, the month of Ramadan is that in which the Quran was revealed as a guidance for people and as clear proofs of the guidance and as means of separating the right from the wrong. This is chapter 2, verse 185. Muslims are encouraged to read the Quran at all times, but during the month of Ramadan, the Quran recitation becomes much more focused. And we have all seen those scenes throughout the world. The holy month of Ramadan comes, and even those who are not so keen in reciting Quran throughout the year, they feel compelled, their hearts open up to this guidance of Allah, the book that guides us towards our eternal felicity and felicitation, right? So Quran becomes very famous and popular throughout this month of Ramadan, where even the youth and the kids are reciting more Quran than they would do throughout the year. Imam Muhammad al-Baqir alayhi salam, the fifth infallible and immaculate Imam, said, "Everything has a spring season for itself, and the spring season for the Quran is the month of Ramadan." See how beautifully Imam has depicted that this is where Quran blossoms in the society. Quran becomes dominant in the society, in the hearts of the people, on the tongues of the people. Every opportunity that every single of the Muslims they find, they try to open up Quran and read, you know, a few verses or a few pages or a chapter. And how many of the people you and I know who complete Quran in the holy month of Ramadan? This is beautiful. The holy Quran is divided into 30 equal parts, which are known as juz. This division has been done so that a Muslim may be able to complete the recitation of the entire Quran during the 30 days of the month of Ramadan. This is why it is said that the Holy Quran is the most read book in the world. Welcome back to your listeners. Today we are discussing the holy month of Quran and du'as, that is the holy month of Ramadan. Mosques and Islamic centers organize special programs for the recitation of the holy Quran. They sit in circles and by rotation each person recites certain verses or pages of the holy Quran while others follow the reciter. The month of Ramadan is also the month of dua, supplication, praying to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. In the same section dealing with fasting, Almighty Allah says, "When my servants ask you concerning me, then say, I am indeed very close to them. I answer the prayer of one who prays when he calls on me." This is chapter 2, verse number 186. Although Muslims pray and do dua on a daily basis throughout the year, it's a very common phenomena. But their prayers and duas increase during the month of Ramadan. The Shia Muslim centers around the world organize special prayers during the Ramadan nights with the ritual and special prayers like dua iftitah and dua kumail, as taught by Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, the commander of the faithful. So brothers and sisters, in this month, you know, while you do many good actions in this blessed month, try to read as much Quran as you can and try to supplicate to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala as much as you can. There are beautiful du'as prescribed to us by the imams of Ahlul Bayt alayhi salatu wasalam, especially Imam Sajjad, the fourth divinely appointed imam alayhi salam. So pick up Sahifat al-Sajjadiyah and try to look for the section where the du'as, special recommended du'as, are mentioned for believers to recite during the holy and blessed month of Ramadan. And inshallah, the ma'arif and the meaning of those du'as, you will find them to be very profound. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, thank you very much for staying with us till the end of today's episode of A to Z. Don't forget to log on to our website at parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We leave you all in the care of Allah. Till next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
News, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With the light.
A restaurant in the Indonesian capital of Jakarta is taking fine dining to new heights, literally and figuratively, by giving diners a one-of-a-kind experience 50 meters above ground. The restaurant is called Lounge in the Sky. Diners are securely strapped into seats fixed to a table and are hoisted into the air using a heavy-duty lift. First, the gourmet meals are prepared in the main kitchen. Then, the food is loaded onto the platform where the dishes are plated and served to the patrons. The suspended guests are able to take advantage of breathtaking views as they gently rotate at great heights.
At first, it was not easy. I was nervous that I wouldn't be able to swallow the food, let alone drink. But after some time, I could eventually eat. It was thrilling.
While enjoying the meals, the guests use seat belts and the accompanying staff are equipped with safety harnesses. The guests are also briefed on safety regulations before the platform is raised. Diners call the one-hour experience exhilarating and worth the high price. The project developers say the restaurant was aimed at reviving local and international tourism sector after a big slump during the COVID-19 pandemic. The culinary experience is a first in Indonesia and the third in the world after Belgium and Malaysia.
South Koreans are getting outside to enjoy the open air with a local cherry blossom festival in central Seoul. This is while the country has been dealing with an ongoing surge of the Omicron variant of COVID-19. With some performances and the beauty of spring, many people look forward to turning the corner on the pandemic. Frank Smith has a story.
Spring has come to South Korea, and the cherry blossoms are blooming. COVID-19 restrictions on gatherings are finally being eased. And at Ansan Park in central Seoul, a small festival is bringing everyone back out.
I first came here with my friends 4 years ago, but we couldn't come for the past 2 years because of COVID. I was impressed to see so many people no longer being overly careful about COVID. And we're also very happy to be able to attend festivals like this one.
South Koreans have been quite diligent in observing social distancing guidelines and wearing masks. The Omicron variant of COVID-19 has been quite severe here, with cases only recently declining below 200,000 per day. Still, the government's decided to open up. From the open-air stage, Noh Ah Ram and his band entertain a crowd that's anxious to finally get outside and enjoy group activities.
Ever since COVID, and particularly for the entirety of 2021, when the pandemic was at its peak, I have been unable to perform. I felt today was a restart. Spring has come, the weather's great, the blossoms beautiful, and I felt all of this was celebrating today's show.
South Korea's vaccination rate is nearly 90%, with children now getting the jab.
At first, I was very scared of COVID as I felt it was life-threatening. But now I feel okay with it because I consider it an experience and a certain reality. Also, I worry less because of the vaccines and the new medications.
The cherry blossoms blooming has been tracked from Jeju Island in the south and up to the capital as warm weather moved north. And with this change in seasons, attitudes toward life with COVID are changing as well. Frank Smith, Seoul.
The first all-private space crew has successfully docked at International Space Station after spending over 20 hours en route. Three paying customers and a former NASA astronaut will spend 10 days aboard the ISS. The tourists will participate in scientific research, including stem cell experiments and exploring how the body ages in space. The civilian crew were launched into space in a SpaceX rocket from the Kennedy Space Center on Friday. The trip was brokered by Axiom Space, which is the U.S.-based startup that coordinates rocket rides and provides necessary training. It's not the first time paying customers have visited the ISS. Russia sold seats on a Soyuz spacecraft last year. But this is the first mission that includes a crew entirely comprised of civilians.
A new selfie museum in Sweden is flipping the script by making visitors both the artist and the exhibit. The establishment is dubbed the Museum and is in a shopping mall in Stockholm. Unlike other selfie museums, this one has no works of art on its walls. Instead, its brightly decorated rooms are meant to serve as fun backgrounds for visitors to take their selfies or shoot videos in. Other rooms let the visitors bury themselves in candy-colored foam bricks, strike a pose under neon lights, or sit on a huge, colorful swing. The manager says the museum is interactive and lets the visitors be the artists themselves in order to create the art they want to see. The Drone Show Korea 2022 has been held at the Busan Exhibition and Convention Center, BEXCO. It featured 137 companies and 533 booths, making this year's incarnation the largest in the show's six-year history. The event also featured the participation of a large international industry representatives from Japan and Western Europe. A highlight of this year's event was military technology centered around the unveiling of new indigenous UAVs. This year's show marked a long-endurance liquid hydrogen drone produced by a South Korean company. These developments reflect South Korea's attempt to improve resilience and revolutionize its approach to warfare. The event puts on display the importance of drone industry in various spheres, including defense purposes.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
More than 163 wildlife species have been released back into lagoons and forests in Colombia's Casanare province after being seized and rehabilitated by authorities fighting wildlife trafficking. These include 15 different species such as anteaters, turtles, macaws, a toucan, and a leopard. They were nurtured back to health by fauna vets from an environmental authority in charge of managing sustainable development. The authority, Corpore Nokia, released more than 1,200 animals back into the wild in 2021 alone. Colombia is one of the world's most biodiverse countries by square kilometer and is home to some 10% of the world's flora and fauna.
A super rare birth has added a cute member to critically endangered Sumatran rhinos of Indonesia. The newborn calf is the sixth born since intensive efforts to breed the species began in the 1980s. The female calf, which doesn't have a name yet, was given birth to by a rhino named Rosa in a sanctuary. Rosa has suffered 8 miscarriages since 2005 when she was brought in from the wild for a breeding program. Fewer than 80 Sumatran rhinos remain in the world, mainly on the Indonesian islands of Sumatra and Borneo. Excessive poaching, along with other threats, has brought the species to the brink of extinction.
With neon lights on the floor and walls, pulsing electronic beats, and a glowing red shuttlecock bouncing back and forth, Malaysian badminton court evokes a sci-fi movie set. Shuttle in the Dark is a badminton hall in the iconic Petronas Twin Towers in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia. It was set up in late 2021 by a sport management company to encourage people to take up the racket sport after 2 years of social restrictions because of the COVID-19 pandemic. Director of INIC Sport Management says the initial goal was to draw sports fans and players back into action.
Our initial goal was, how can we encourage and gain back the interest of people to come back and play? And not only those enthusiasts, but then as well the new people who was not able to or never play badminton before. So that's why we come out with this experience called Shuttle in the Dark.
Playing on a futuristic court presents an unusual challenge for athletes as they have to adjust their eyes to the darkness to fly. Badminton is one of the most popular sports in Malaysia and Asia, with a thriving community in the Southeast Asian community. It has produced some of the world's top-ranked players. A zoo in Ireland's capital, Dublin, has unveiled its newest habitat called the Himalayan Hills, a brand new home of the red panda and the snow leopard. Visitors are able to see the red panda's habitat by traveling along the new trail around a rocky edge to an open viewing area. The red pandas are typically climbing, exploring, or munching on bamboo at the top of broad-leafed evergreen trees. The expanded habitat was designed with a red panda's tree-dwelling lifestyle in mind. Also, visitors can gaze up at the 15-meter rocky slope through an impressive panoramic viewing area to spot the snow leopards. These elusive felines are typically nocturnal, so catching a glimpse of one is a rare treat.
Yeah, the animals are settling in well. We've tried to recreate the wild habitat in the Himalayan hills. Both species live quite high up. In case of the snow leopards, up to 5,000 meters on these very steep rocky slopes, which you can see here in the habitat as well. We've tried to use the topology of Dublin Zoo.
The project took a few years to complete. It was halted in 2020 due to the COVID-19 pandemic and massive budget shortages, but was restarted after government funding in 2021. The zoo is part of a protection project for red pandas and snow leopards. These animals are listed as vulnerable due to threats from poaching and severe habitat loss. Ancient Pompeii has a new guardian, Spot, a four-legged robot dog that will inspect the ancient Italian city's streets and tunnels to identify structural issues. The robot, designed by the U.S. firm Boston Dynamics, will patrol Pompeii at nighttime. The robot inspects the smallest of spaces and gathers data for planning interventions to fix safety and structural issues. Equipped with a 360-degree camera, Spot will also protect the city's streets from illegal relic hunters who cause structural damage to the ruins by digging tunnels. Pompeii will also have its own eye in the sky, a Leica BLK-2 flying laser scanner capable of autonomously conducting 3D scans of the ruins, helping Spot carry out its tasks. Safeguarding ancient sites from treasure hunters has always been a problem for every country, especially the ancient ones.
The cherry blossom or sakura season in the Japanese capital is a magical experience as trees burst into bloom, dousing the streets with stunning shades of pink. This year, people are enjoying the occasion to the fullest as COVID restrictions are no more there. Thousands gathered in central Tokyo wearing masks, taking pictures and posing for selfies among the trees. Cherry flowers reach full bloom on Sunday, 4 days earlier than usual, according to the Japan Meteorological Agency. The age-old tradition of viewing cherry blossoms typically takes place across the country. The flowers are a national obsession. People flock to parks to hold parties and picnics. However, due to the pandemic, authorities have asked people to refrain from eating and drinking outdoors.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/parstodayen. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/parstodayenglish.
In the limelight.
Imran Khan succumbed to U.S. gamesmanship because of his refusal to bow to Washington's dictates to cancel his scheduled state visit to Moscow on the threshold of the Ukraine crisis and his presence in the Russian capital. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by Kayhan, international staff writer. This article is published under the heading "The U.S. Bows Out Imran Khan." Stay tuned for more. Pakistan, which has rarely experienced political stability since its foundation in 1947, has seen the exit of yet another prime minister without completing his term. The removal of Imran Khan Niazi through a no-confidence vote by the minimum majority of MPs following a high-pitched drama that saw the 342-seat parliament dissolved by the president in a bid to save the prime minister and then
restored to power by the Supreme Court in a few days means that it is not the masses or the common man who control the destiny of Pakistan, but persons with vested interest, the powerful military chiefs, the politicians influenced by foreign forces rather than concerned about the sovereignty of the country. The flamboyant cricketer and a world-class all-rounder who, as captain, had led Pakistan to victory in 1992 World Cup, the only instance for the country has failed as a political leader to steer Pakistan to triumph through the maze of the national economy dominated by corrupt elements and on the international scene where there is no fair play because the U.S. is the main spoil sport. As a matter of fact, it was the U.S. through its vicious spin on the Pakistan pitch that brought about the dismissal of the master batsman who had skillfully played on different turfs of the cricketing world. Imran Khan succumbed to U.S. gamesmanship because of his refusal to bow to Washington's dictates to cancel his scheduled state visit to Moscow and the threshold of the Ukraine crisis and his presence in the Russian capital. He expressed regret when American pressures made the coalition allies of his Pakistan Tehreek-e-Insaf PTI to withdraw support and render his party a minority in order to start the process of no-confidence vote against him. Perhaps it was his spirit of fair play that made him openly criticize U.S. meddling in Pakistan's affairs that the distanced the generals and the political elite from him because of the exposure of their unexplained awe of Washington, despite the fact that various American administrations have never treated Pakistan fairly. Thus, it seems it was Imran Khan's independence, stand, and respect for national sovereignty that led to his exit from the political field, rather than what his critics alleged to be a deepening economic crisis and double-digit inflation, factors that have always plagued Pakistan since its birth because of over-reliance on the Arab donors, such as Saudi Arabia and the UAE, which used their monetary grants and loans as levers to deter Pakistan's progress and development in spite of being a nuclear power. An example in this regard is Islamabad's lack of guts to implement the peace pipeline project for import of natural gas from the Islamic Republic of Iran for national development because of not just American pressures, but threats from Riyadh and Abu Dhabi to cut all economic aid. Imran may be back in the pavilion, but according to the Pakistani media, whatever his shortcomings, most Pakistanis still see him in the roles of a crowd-pulling cricketer, a philanthropist who built a famous cancer hospital in Lahore after retirement from sports, and a politician who was not allowed to carry out his reforms.
Californian drought. This old farmer hasn't seen this much snow in years.
This is just water that's coming off of the mountain that's held up here because the old thing, thousands and thousands, millions, huge years ago, made it so that this was a solid area, so all the water is held right at this level in this area before it goes clear on